We are back with another episode of Angel Insights brought to you by Syndicate Room. And for all first-time listeners to the show, this is the podcast that takes you, the listener, deep inside the world of angel investing to reveal the tips, tactics and strategies of the world's best angels. And today's guest truly is an exceptional one. So I'm delighted to introduce Russ Shaw. Now, Russ is the founder at Tech London Advocates, or the TLA, as you might hear it referred to in the interview. And the TLA is a private sector-led coalition of over 2,700 expert individuals committed to championing London's potential as a world-class hub for tech and digital businesses. And when Russ is not changing the world with the TLA, Russ is a prolific angel investor and non-exec director of a number of high-growth companies. He's also a limited partner in Ariadne Capital's ACE Fund. However, we cannot forget to mention Russ's immense career in the world of operations, as he was also a vice president and general manager at Skype prior to the exit to Microsoft. And before Skype, he was at the titan that is Telefonica, where he was global innovation director. And as always, the article that accompanies this episode can be found on the Syndicate Room website at syndicateroom.com. But without further ado, I'm delighted to welcome the man himself, Russ Shaw, founder at Tech London Advocates. Russ, welcome to Angel Insights. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks. Good to be here.
Now, can you start off by giving us a little background about you and tell us how you made your way into the investing world?
Sure. Well, I guess my background is kind of, there's two halves to it, if you will. The first half was spent in consumer financial services, working at big organizations like American Express and also Charles Schwab, where I learned a lot about investing. We all had to take our Series 7 brokerage exam. That's one of the requirements that Chuck Schwab asks of every Schwab employee. But then from there, I jumped into the technology and telco space, working at places like, well, at the time it was called NTL, now Virgin Media. I was the CEO of a later stage VC-backed startup called Mobileway that was acquired by Sybase in 2006, I believe. I then went to O2. I was the chief marketing officer for O2, and then we were acquired by Telefonica. I became their global innovation director. And then from there, I went to Skype, running Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and then setting up a mobile division within Skype, and left Skype when we were acquired by Microsoft. So had three good exits in my career, and that was in 2011. And since then, I've focused a lot on investing and in my not-for-profit called Tech London Advocates.
My word, if everyone could do such a good synopsis as that, I'd be thrilled. unpacking a little there, and this is sure. Where we said I don't stick to the schedule. Schwab Investing, you said you learned a lot there about investing itself. What were the big takeaways from that experience for you on the investment side?
Yeah. And the thing I always say to people is, you know, Chuck Schwab was a huge believer investing for the long term. And he always said, look, don't sweat the short term, you know, make some risky investments, but make some, you know, not so risky investments, have a balanced portfolio. And that really stuck with me right to this day. You know, yes, I invest in early stage startups I'm a limited partner in a VC fund, in a private equity fund, but that's not where my entire portfolio is either. I do very balanced investing across the board. And I can keep hearing Chuck in the back of my head saying, you know, look, invest for the long term, take a balanced view. Don't put all of your eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm. And when you say balance, I always think a third, invest, spend and save. How do you allocate that, if you don't mind me asking? Is there a kind of risk profile in your head?
Yeah, well, and some of that changes and evolves as you get older. So, you know, I'm now a 50-something. So, you know, my investment strategy is probably not quite as risky as it was, you know, maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago. So I have, you know, I need to think about my retirement. Obviously, I need to think about how I manage my tax situation. Being an American living and residing in the United Kingdom, I get taxed in two jurisdictions, not just the United Kingdom, but the United States does tax its citizens wherever they are in the world. So I have to keep that in mind. But when I talk about balance, it's looking at, you know, where do I put the money? I know a lot of people, particularly in London and across the UK, like to invest in property, and property is certainly been a very good investment, but I wouldn't necessarily put all of my money into property. A chunk of it's there. You know, obviously some of it's in UK businesses. I look at North America. I look a bit towards Asia. I have a very good advisor who I sit down and work with, and we map this all out, and my wife is My wife, Leslie, is also a part of this strategy as well. So we try and look at this end to end and make sure that there's a component where I can say, right, I want to invest in this startup, or I want to put more money into the venture fund and top that up. So that's what I mean by balanced.
So I'm really intrigued then. You said about being an LP in a fund and then also angel investments. Now, why did you choose both strategies, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, it comes back to that balanced approach. I mean, I'm not what I would describe as an expert investor, but I've enjoyed being an angel because I like working with early stage businesses. And I think what really gets me motivated is the founder, the entrepreneur, or the CEO of that startup. And so if I believe in what he or she is doing, for me, it's fun to invest with them. But at the same time, you know, going into a venture fund, going into a private equity fund, you then start to invest along the spectrum, if you will. You're, you know, in a venture fund, you're usually, you know, early stage Series A through B, possibly through a C round. Private equity fund, you're looking at later stage rounds as companies are growing in size and scaling up. So for me, what I've really enjoyed is just playing along that spectrum from early stage, seed round, angel investing, all the way through to pre-IPO. And part of this, you know, for me now is about learning and seeing what happens along every stage of that investing value chain, which in turn helps me when I run my advocates group called Tech London Advocates, where we have people all across the digital and tech community from early stage to big corporates. And it's important to understand how every aspect of that is working.
I'm intrigued. You kind of described there the different stages of the funding cycle, obviously, and following on as an investor.
Yes.
How much of the ratio-wise do you leave for those follow-on rounds compared to the initial rounds?
Yeah, I think, you know, and that's one of the things, Harry, that I've learned over the years is, you know, I do try and leave, say, another 20-30% available to do follow-on rounds. Mm-hmm. And I think as time has gone on, I've learned that that's actually more and more important to make sure that you have, you're holding a percent of your portfolio back so that you can do subsequent rounds. You know, whether it's the other investors coming back saying, look, we want to raise another round, or, you know, I sit on the board of a Danish VC-backed fintech business, and I've been, you know, and, you know, along the way, there have been opportunities to buy incremental shares. Great. Happy to do that because I'm on the board. I can see what the business is doing. I like where the business is going. I have some influence. Of course, I'm going to invest more in it and put more of my money behind it. So I think that is a really important point that you make for investors. Don't just put the money in up front and think it's going to keep working for you without any additional investment. If you like the business, if you believe in the business, you need to be ready for subsequent rounds. And also to make sure you don't get too diluted down the line either.
I also spoke to an angel the other day who said that every angel check that they make must be the same size in terms of, like, you know, financial quantity. Is that the same for you?
No. No, I mean, because for me, every business, you know, there's my portfolio and how I look at my portfolio and frankly, what I have available to spend. And the flip side of it is, what does the business need? What do they want? And, you know, every business is different in terms of where they're going and what they're trying to do. So for some, it might be, you know, 20, 25,000. For others, they might say, look, I need to raise from every one of my investors another 50 to 100K. Fine. You know, it depends on where that business is going, what the business model is, what they plan to invest in and build as part of the business, for me, dictates the amount that you should be investing.
And one of the big attractive points when you say to a founder, why do you need this money?
Yeah.
What are the kind of right reasons? Because there's a big wave of founders now that potentially are raising money, whether it be angel or VC, because it's the natural path and it seems like it's the right thing to do for a startup.
Sure.
What are the right reasons? Is it kind of geographical expansion, hiring? What do you get excited by when you hear them emphasize their roadmap?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. I mean, I think, you know, if I believe in the business model and think the business model is right, you know, and they might say, look, we need to invest more in the technology platform, or we want to go out and hire world-class talent to come into the business. You know, we need a better CTO. We need a strong CFO. Or, you know, they're saying, look, you know, we're looking at the UK, but now we're looking to expand into Europe. These are the markets. To me, they're all very sound reasons. My personal philosophy is, you know, I want to see these businesses demonstrating high growth. I am less concerned about them getting to profitability in the near term. And that might be different from some of the other investors, particularly UK investors, who I think are starting to change. But, you know, I think over the past 10, 15 years, there's been a much shorter time frame for investors here to get to profitability. Whereas my philosophy is, look, if you can double or quadruple the size of your growth, but your profitability is not going to come for a number of years, that's okay. Demonstrate that your business model works and it's a high growth business model. And I will certainly help you every step of the way where I can, and I'll try and find other investors who are real believers in high growth strategies.
And do you find yourself in a real market opportunity then? Because a lot of investors are now focusing on ability to get to profitability quickly and focusing on unit economics, leaving those high growth, non-profit making startups with less capital available. Have you noticed that?
Not so much, actually. I do sit, you know, I'm an LP. I do sit in some investor meetings. And my sense is that over the past few years, more people have been willing to say, or at least the investors that I've met are willing to say, I will trade off the short term for the longer term. You know, there are still some people out there, of course, they're going to say, I want to get to profitability quickly. I want to cash out. I want to see a return on this. Because coming back to where we started the conversation, Harry, everybody has his or her own unique investment strategy. And I get that. And I meet investors out there who want to see a business get to profitability in 3 years. You know, I tend to meet more investors who are kind of on that longer term journey, who are real believers in high growth, who are willing to say, I want to see this business become a unicorn. I want to be part of that journey. And, you know, what we're seeing in London and across the UK is that more and more of these high growth businesses are securing good valuations, because I think investors are saying, actually, they are delivering high growth. Maybe some of them are not getting to profitability, you know, as soon as they may have said they are. But my view is, look, that's okay. I'm willing to make that trade-off.
And then in terms of, you know, you said there about your favorability towards growth. And how's your investment decision-making changed then in the way you view startups? You've been in angel investing now for a number of years. Mm. How's that changed in your mindset?
I don't think it really has changed that much. I mean, I'm not a hands-on angel investor, so I need to make that clear right from the start. I mean, I do meet other angel investors who are in there, they're advising the management team. They want to take more of a hands-on approach. My philosophy is, look, I'm there when you need me. You know, if I like you as a founder, entrepreneur, and CEO, and we have a good rapport, if I like your business model, if I'm clear about where you're trying to take your business over the next 2 to 3 years, that's all I ask for, except check in with me from time to time. I know many of these early stage founders and entrepreneurs are phenomenally busy, but you have to communicate with your investors on a semi-regular basis. And, you know, there are one or two who I've gone back to say, look, I haven't heard from you for 6 months. I don't expect a full detailed newsletter of what's going on, but just drop me a few bullet points, or let me know what issues you're having, or let me know if I can make some introductions or connections for you that are part of your journey. And that's what I look for. And that's that philosophy. Actually, if anything, Harry, it's probably become much more entrenched, as I have so many other demands on my time. I just don't have time to be a hands-on angel investor.
Absolutely. And talking of demands on your time, I want to move to TLA now.
Sure.
Investing in London. And TLA, can you give us a little synopsis on TLA and what the organization does for those that don't know?
Sure. Well, Tech London Advocates, it's an independent, not-for-profit, private sector-led group of leaders, tech leaders, digital leaders, from founders, entrepreneurs, and early-stage investors, all the way through to big corporates, big banks, and kind of everybody, and I mean everybody from a diversity point of view, who plays in the tech ecosystem. We've got teachers, students, artists, designers, you name it, are in the group, intentionally so. And I set this up because back a few years ago, I saw our prime minister doing a lot to promote the tech community in London. I saw Mayor Boris Johnson doing the same. And I thought, you know, this is great. National government, city government doing a lot to promote tech. Where's the private sector ecosystem? Yes, there were groups of angels. There were groups of entrepreneurs. But I didn't see any diverse group out there that would come together you know, and I ask advocates to do three things. Look, be consistent in your messaging and use TLA as a resource when you're speaking, blogging, tweeting about the good and not so good about what's going on in tech. Introduce a new advocate to the group. The group is free. It's open to anyone, but you come in through advocate introductions, kind of from my days at Skype, and then adopt the ethos. We are here to help one another for the greater good, and that greater good is building a vibrant tech sector across London. We've now created sister organizations. We've got Tech Nordic advocates covering Scandinavia and the Baltics, and next month Tech North advocates is launching to cover the north of England. Again, all with the same philosophy and ethos, which is not rocket science, Harry. It's how Silicon Valley is where it is today. They've been doing this for 75 years. They're in a very different place, but you know, they open doors for each other. They're constantly networking, connecting, and making introductions. And I felt that as London's tech community was taking off, it didn't have a comparable group that would do that. So that's why I set this up. And now we've got, gosh, we've just gone over 2,800 advocates across London, the UK, and around the world. And we've got now up to 25 working groups that are focused on all kinds of issues, areas like fintech, creative tech, cyber. We've got geographic groups focused on India, China, Africa. We're about to launch a Middle East group. So it's kind of where people want to come and be with like-minded leaders.
So would you say then, kind of borrowing from Silicon Valley, that the fundamental determinant for their success is the interconnectivity and cohesion within their circles?
Absolutely. I think that is a core part of their DNA that, you know, they learned a very long time ago. And I always say, look, you can go to the busiest VC on Sand Hill Road, Sequoia Capital. They're very good. They'll always give you 30 minutes. Most of the time they say, hey, no thanks, not interested. But it usually comes with a, but I'm going to connect you to so-and-so. Let me introduce you to so-and-so over here who I think would be interested in what you're doing. And everybody there works that way. And not just kind of from VC to VC, but startup to startup, big company to small company. And it's just part of how they work and they operate. Mm-hmm. And when I set this group up a few years ago, a lot of people were saying to me, London feels too closed door in terms of, you know, not getting access, not making connections. So I said, look, let's change that. And I, you know, I think we still have a long way to go, but I do pick up and hear from people that London is a much more open, accessible, and friendly place for the digital and tech community.
And last question before we dive into a quick fire round, and that's okay. What more can be done by London to increase the cohesion and connectivity and increase the ecosystem as a whole? Is there anything that we can do?
I think part of it is just, it comes down to individuals. We are, you know, this is people at the end of the day. You know, we're all trying to help each other. And I think if every one of us can just spare that little bit of extra time to make that introduction, to make that connection, you know, to help somebody out who might need an investor introduction or might need some coaching or mentoring, that is something that we can each do. And I'm trying to bring as many people as I can into this community, because some people are good at doing that and some people are not so good at doing that, but who want to be good at doing that. And we will collectively see more and more success if we do it well. And I already think over the past 2 to 3 years, you know, London is now on the map as one of the leading tech hubs globally. I was just at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas last week, and before that, New York. And people keep asking me, what's in the Kool-Aid you guys are drinking over there? It sounds like it's really going great guns. And I said, it is. Come over to see for yourself. It's a really exciting place to be.
And I'd love to dive into the quickfire round now. So I say a short statement and then you give me your immediate thoughts.
I will do my best, Harry. Okay.
So your best piece of advice ever given to you. It's a tough one. I save the best for the quickfire.
Be patient. Don't expect that things are going to happen anytime quickly. Take a deep breath and step back, and patience, you know, it's overused. Patience is a virtue, but patience is good advice.
Your favorite startup or investing blog or newsletter? What are your kind of must reads?
I read a lot of things pretty much every day. I mean, I do like things like the Huffington Post. I check into Tech City News, Tech City Insider, you know, publications like that, startups.co.uk. I probably scan in any given day a good dozen. And then I use Twitter. I am on Twitter a lot, and I'm scanning it 3 or 4 times a day to see who's out there, who's posting what, who's got the latest investing round. So I don't have one particular favorite. I use quite a few.
Absolutely. And then the vision for TLA, where's the ideal in 5 years' time?
Well, I said, look, I set this up when I was 50. When I turn 60, so I've got, just around 7 years, less than 7 years to go, I want London, it will still be work in progress, but I want London to be seen as one of the top three global digital and technology hubs that people love to be part of.
What would you say the current three are?
I would say clearly Silicon Valley is one. And then I think it's a real battle out there for number two. I think there are cities, New York, Tel Aviv. I think watch out for Bangalore. I was there last September. Very impressive. Don't underestimate the Chinese in terms of what's going on in Beijing and Shanghai. Stockholm, Copenhagen, Helsinki, the Scandinavian capitals are all very important. Berlin, coming along, but Berlin is going to evolve very differently. So we're all kind of jostling in that next tier below Silicon Valley. And I want people to say, look, in 5 years' time, you kind of say it's Silicon Valley. I don't know, maybe it's New York or Bangalore, and it's London. Those are the places where you need to be.
Sure. And then the biggest mistake you see angels make?
I mean, personally, coming back to what I said earlier, don't push your companies for profitability too quickly. You'll miss potentially a big idea, a fantastic vision that just needs an extra 2 or 3 years to run to be really transformational or really disruptive.
Mm-hmm. And then final one, your most recent investment and why you said yes.
My investments that I've put back into my portfolio. So it might be I've done a little bit more in the Ariadne Capital Fund, a VC fund. I've certainly topped up the Vitruvian Private Equity Fund. You know, when people ask for follow-on rounds, I invest in those. That's my primary one. From a public company point of view, I like some of the online businesses. I really like ASOS. I like AO.com. You know, I like Just Eat. I was an investor in Just Eat, you know, and there are a lot of naysayers about Just Eat, but I think they continue to go from strength to strength. So I think these e-commerce online platforms coming out of London, coming out of the UK, there are really smart people behind them, some really good leaders behind them. Unruly was acquired by News International. SwiftKey earlier this year was acquired by Microsoft. Those are two companies that I was looking very closely at because they have some really great leaders.
Well, Russ, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your journey and TLA's immense rise with us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to speak, Harry.
What a fantastic guest Russ was today, and I'd like to say a huge hand to him for giving up his time today to appear on the show. And as always, the article that accompanies today's episode with Russ can be found on the website at syndicateroom.com. Likewise, we would love to hear what you think of the show, so do tweet us at syndicateroom. I'd also like to say before we leave today that early stage investing is risky, therefore please ensure that you do engage in the proper due diligence prior to making the investment. As always, it's been a fantastic pleasure bringing you today's episode, and we look very forward to bringing you next week's episode with Simon Murdoch at Delta.